Welcome to the first Supercoach Coach podcast of the 2016 season. My name's Marcus and I'm joined by FB Donkey.
G'day everyone, good to be back.
We are super, super excited to be back for, this is our eighth season, Mark. Our eighth season doing Supercoach podcast makes us by far the longest running Supercoach podcast out there, the longest fantasy football podcast out there, and we're really, really proud of that. And, you know, in a couple years' time, Mark, we'll be saying 10 years. So let's keep our fingers crossed this keeps going strong. Thank you for a massive season of support last year in 2015.
Huge.
Yeah, absolutely huge. Our numbers grew immensely. We've not seen that sort of tipping point growth before. So we're hoping that continues on into this year. We averaged 5,000 listens for each podcast last season, which when we first started out, Mark, I think that was a bit of a pipe dream. So
yeah, I had five mates listening to those early shows.
So we've come a long way and we're glad to be back and talking footy. It's good to be back talking to you, Mark. I do miss you over the off season. We give each other a little bit more space, and I'm psyched to be back and absolutely excited. I hope you are too.
I would miss me too, mate.
Good to know that you rate yourself so highly, mate. This first episode is going to be a fairly introductory one, just a casual chat about season 2016, what to expect. We've done, you know, a little bit of team selections here and there, Mark and I, but nothing concrete as of yet. And of course, there's a lot of changes. The Essendon saga that we're going to talk about a little bit, which Mark's not going to enjoy. But there's a lot of fluid factors still in 2016, and I suspect that as a result of that, we might not lock away our team for a little while yet. So.
I've been probably eating a bit too much and I haven't returned into the preseason in the greatest form, but I'll catch up quickly because we've done so many of them, mate.
Mm. So changes to 2016 is how we're going to kick off this podcast, and there's no real significant rule changes like there was last year, is there, Mark?
Not to the actual game, it's like the Supercoach game, but there is a couple of AFL rule changes, which no more sub rule. How good is that?
Yeah, that's definitely exciting because it's been really killing us in Supercoach, watching our rookies tank and watching players get put out to pasture when they're on track for a massive 120, and all of a sudden at 95 at three-quarter time, they're put on the bench and iced. So
and the rolling lockout, like just having to focus so closely to it, like who's the sub, who's not the sub. I know there's going to be laid outs and stuff this year, but it will take a lot of pressure off.
So that's a very good point, Mark. We definitely have complained a little bit in the last few years about Supercoach getting a little bit harder in terms of being online at every single team sheet, just so that you can make sure you don't have a sub and lose out on those, you know, crucial points sometimes. So yeah, we're both very glad that that's gone out, and even though Supercoach itself hasn't had rule changes to alleviate that stress, the game itself is changing in the right way to help us super coaches.
It's just a memory. It's just a bad dream, the sub rule. I'm sure we'll forget about it soon enough.
Yeah, and of course, there's decreased rotations as well, and we'll get into, you know, more ramifications of that. But just quickly, there have been some changes to prizes for 2016, which we're pretty excited about. None more so, Mark, than prizes extending all the way down to 10th this year, which is super exciting.
Such a great decision. In the first probably five seasons that I was playing Supercoach, I was involved in helping the top two or three teams try and make deals about how they're going to split prize money and creating second prizes. It should just be done by the site. If you finish top 10 in Supercoach, you deserve some cash in your bank. They haven't increased the top prize since I started, so still only 50,000, but they should. It's great to see them offer 5,000 for second and $1,000 to each of the rest of the top 10.
Hmm. And I reckon, look, we're playing a game that most of us enjoy a lot anyway. 50,000 is pretty great, for especially for the player pool that we have. And so I like to see, you know, the prizes extend downward rather than just stacking on that number one. And like Mark said, it's been something that he's helped facilitate in the past. So it's good to see it happen. And in fact, you know, a lot of other competitions, fantasy football competitions, have already started doing that. So I think, if anything, we might be the last one to sort of cotton on to this. So long overdue. And well done to Supercoach for making that change.
Yeah, definitely stoked by that. It'd be great for the prizes to go down even further, but I know that cash is not unlimited.
Yeah.
Also, they've expanded the weekly prizes. It's not just First gets a prize. Now, first gets 1,000, second gets 500, and third gets $250. So that's good as well. If you finish top three, that's pretty cool. You get a little bit of bonus.
Yep, yep. And we've definitely found, you know, with the quality of coaches increasing, as more people release more Supercoach content and people get more experience with playing Supercoach, it's very rare nowadays that some completely random team spikes it and wins a big prize. And normally we've been seeing, you know, especially last year, teams still ranked in, you know, in top 20, top 30,000, winning, you know, the weekly prize. So it's good to see that they're rewarding it so well and that it does extend down to third. And of course, the biggest introduction in terms of prize money, which frankly I'm a little bit disappointed about.
Well, in one element, that's awesome. Like, if you just looked at it very briefly and it said they're going to give $18,000 to the leading league, how cool is that? That is exactly what we've been asking for. This is our dream come true. This is what we wanted. That's awesome. But there's one problem.
Oh, and there's a huge one, not just a small one. It's a head scratcher. No, scratch that. I'm pulling my hair out over it. I wish they would have done some consulting with some of the bigger leagues.
Obviously.
Yeah. I think we've got enough credits in the bank for them to at least ask us what we think about it, considering we push the league competitiveness as hard as anybody else out there. But anyway, what we're referring to is $18,000 cash to the league that's at the top of the ladder after one round.
One round?
One bloody round, Mark. So complete luck sacks. Going to walk away. Hopefully that's me. Hopefully that's you too, Mark. But, you know, let's be honest. Just a lucky team of 18 and going to walk away with 18,000. To put that in perspective, the person who comes third after 23 grueling weeks of Supercoach gets the same amount as a group of 18 lucky guys who walk away with each a grand after one round. I mean, that doesn't even build any hype. I don't even understand it. I mean, after one round, we just give away 18K and basically everyone will forget about it. So, I don't even understand it. I don't understand it. But, I mean, at least it's there. At least they're giving out money. And at least it's a step in the right direction. Who knows? Maybe next year they'll split it half and half. 9,000 for the after the first round and 9,000 after the last round. I think I saw that suggested on Twitter with our direct league competition.
We wouldn't have won this money last year, but it would be so much more entertaining if it was available. Like,
yeah,
it would create interest. It would have people following the league competition. But yeah, this is just a bonus giveaway to people creating a league in the first week. And I think one of the downsides of it is that it's going to get people going to try and game the system. Who knows what consequences that's going to have.
So maybe they're doing it then, Mark, so that they get more team entrants. Because, you know, if they're doing it to create genuine, you know, league competition and promote that, then you would have thought they asked the guys who helped create seven of last year's top 10 leagues, which is something to celebrate, Mark. Whoop, whoop.
That is definitely something to celebrate. You would have thought that the people that had been really pushing the league competition for the last, what is this, our eighth year, Marcus?
Yeah.
But there's been only a few groups out there really pushing it, and we've definitely been one of them, and especially on the podcast, we've been pushing it for years. I know the people from the Herald Sun listen to this podcast. Why didn't they just do what we needed?
Like you said, we do push very hard for the league competition. We'd like to think of ourselves as good ambassadors for that. So, you know, hopefully it's a bit more dialogue around that next year, because it is a very significant prize and very generous of them as well. Like, I do have to give them a pat on the back. 18,000 for the league. That's great.
So all the prize changes are awesome. It's great that they've added in the extra money. We just think they could have maybe done the league thing a little bit better.
Yeah. But anyway, moving on, and we want to keep things on a positive and good note. So well done, Herald Sun. Maybe ask for our 2 cents maybe next time. All right, on to the AFL issues and the changes. And, you know, before we go into the more abstract ones, like the sub rule being gone and potential ramifications for picking our teams or whatever, the Essendon saga is something that we obviously have to discuss. And obviously the whole world, whole footy world is feeling very much for the Bombers and especially their supporters.
So.
And well,
really?
Well, I mean,
not the impression that I get talking to people, man.
All right. Well, I mean, there's some one-eyed supporters out there, but I like to think that most of us have a bit of compassion in our hearts and a bit of empathy. And I'm certainly feeling for you, mate. I felt like this has gone on for way too long. And so, but it's something that we have to deal with now. It's something Essendon has to deal with now, and whatever
something the super coaches have to deal with. Yeah. I think my first response to it is maybe it's going to make things, I don't know whether it's too easy or just easier in picking a team, because you're going to have people like Mitch Brown might have been getting games for the Bombers this year, but he wouldn't have been a walk-up starter and now guaranteed absolute lock. So there's a few more cheap rookies that are going to be a lot easier to pick. I think that that makes the game a little bit easier.
Yeah, well, from my perspective, you know, I've got a second team now too, because I got Stokesy coming out, Kelly, Mitch Brown, you know.
The Geelong reserve.
Simkin, and I heard you might be potentially signing George Burberry. So, you know, I'm very keen to see how they go in this. And then I think you're right, Mark. Initial impressions is we're going to have a lot of Essendon players probably starting in our teams. Polkinghorne, I know, is one a lot of people have been looking at already. As a result of that, it's very likely that our team structures will be heavily dictated by those value players, as team structures usually are. They're dictated by the best value rookies, where they're deepest, and the most obvious value players, mid-price players, and most of these mid-price players don't have the same risk factor attached to them. They're not returning from injury and stuff like that. They're coming into a team that's literally been stripped of their players, and they're going to rock up and start for them to be as competitive as the Bombers can be. So,
An example might be Leuenberger is not competing with Bell Chambers for the ruck spot. He's an absolute walk-up starter. He'll play every week if he's fit.
Yeah.
I think that one of the arguments that I'm seeing out there, Marcus, is that it might limit the top end or the scoring ability of the Bombers that we're looking to bring in, because Essendon's not going to win as many games, so their share of the pie is going to go down, so it probably improves Leuenberger's job security, but it potentially lowers his scoring potential.
Yeah, and I 100% agree with that. So I think, you know, the players that we'll be looking at from Essendon, similar to, you know, probably early Gold Coast and GWS days, is look at a team that potentially won't win many games, but provides a lot of jobs. I heard that under your breath.
Sounds bleak, mate. Seriously.
But you know what I mean. They don't have the same ceiling, but they have this great job security. So we're looking at players that really are 300,000 and under. They don't have a lot of risk attached in terms of the monetary spend that you have to invest in them, but they can, you know, all it takes is a couple of big games, a couple of hundreds in a row to really boost their score and you know, make them really valuable cash cows. And so, you know, somebody like Leuenberger potentially may not be as attractive as a Polkinghorne, even though Leuenberger has the potential to average 100. So I think you're right that it will be an interesting dynamic. Until the 10 players are signed, and at the moment of recording, I believe there's 6 signed at the moment.
7, mate. We did Jamar this afternoon.
Oh, brilliant. So 7. Oh, Jamar's competing with Leuenberger all of a sudden.
He didn't even get a game for Melbourne last year, mate. He'll be the backup ruckman.
Yeah, fair enough. So 7 players locked the way. Until the next 3 are also done, and we have a look at just how much the Essendon kids have improved and what mix the coaches will want to go in with in terms of youth and exposing kids to more AFL and staying competitive and putting some of the older blokes on park. So
I think the two that really stand out for me were the higher draft picks last year, Aaron Francis and Darcy Parrish at about 200,000. They were probably always a good chance to get a lot of games for the Bombers this year, especially Parrish. Now they should, if fit, play as many as they can in the Giants sort of a mold of a rookie.
So exciting times from a Supercoach perspective in terms of, you know, anything different to change up season to season always makes things a little bit interesting, and to see potentially where we can find some easy recruits, especially with the prices of rookies being steadily increased from year to year. You know, that is an exciting perspective to have to season 2016.
Yeah, positive spin.
Positive spin. Well, I mean, Mark, you'll probably be championing the positive spin more than anyone to get through this season 2016. So,
I'm very tempted just to put my head in a hole and come back out and then in 12 months' time.
Well, I hope you'll still be rocking up to some of the games, mate. They need some support.
I've still got my membership. I'm trying to travel interstate again, but
Yeah, well, that is good of you, Mark. You're traveling interstate to watch the Bombers.
booked my tickets before the suspension got handed down, mate.
I see. Well, yeah. I hope it's at least to a warm place then.
Yes, a summer getaway to Perth, mate.
Nice. All right, so we'll move off Essendon now because it's still a fairly fluid situation. There's no point really looking at, you know, Kelly or Stokes or whoever yet without getting a better understanding of job security and how they're faring. Who knows how much preseason that each of them have had so far or what they've been doing in their offseason. So we'll move past that and go to the sub rule being gone and just want to get your thoughts. Are there any concrete things that you see, you know, coming out of this in terms of rookie selections? Do you see this changing anything really for 2016 or we're just happy that it's gone?
I definitely think that I do. I just, like, I love the confidence that you can pick people with or people that were in the past, like regular sub candidates. The confidence that you could have this year in picking that sort of player, that they're not going to just have this price stall or whatever, is going to be awesome. And I guess reading into that a little bit further, if they're not going to be stalling in price, then you should have more luck with cash generation. Mm-hmm. I know that maybe in the past we've had better off cash generation because of the expansion teams and they're not there anymore. But if a rookie isn't going to be the sub at all, that should mean that you're making more money quicker, which means you might be able to get more premiums into your side or higher level premiums into your side.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that one, Mark. That's the first thing that came to mind for me. Better reliance on cash generation, hopefully meaning, you know, bigger teams in terms of dollars on park and therefore star value and the amount of, you know, quality premiums that you can get in. The big thing for me is, you know, I remember talking last year about lots of rookies, you know, early on in the season. But then once you started getting to the mid-season where you were relying on injuries for rookies to come in, that got really sketchy because these were rookies that would have to prove themselves, and if they weren't, there were subs, or often they'd get to prove themselves as subs, and that meant that mid-season rookie cash generation was so hectic, and that was especially painful, exacerbated by the buys, and made it very hard to plan around, and that just added a whole layer of complication that honestly turned off a lot of people. A lot of people get to the buys, don't find any rookies, their team starts stalling, and then just like, well, I'll be done and I'll see you again next year, Supercoach. So I'm hoping that alleviates a bit of that pain, and throughout the mid-season we get a little bit more of that cash generation and we don't go to talks like looking for mid prices mid-season like we did last year. You know, even though Wallace worked out somewhat okay, I still do not really like that move strategically, bringing in a Wallace mid-season as a mid-price player to then hopefully keep as a premium or have to, you know, side swap to a true ultra premium in midfield. That was not an ideal position to be in, and a lot of us were forced into that game last year, and that's not a fun feeling.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you get your gambling on rookies, and then when they're the sub, it can be really season defining, and especially around those buys. So no, I think you're right, that's a really good way to look at it, and hopefully it keeps more less serious coaches involved.
I'm so happy the only thing we have to look out for is late withdrawals, not like sub, take them off the bench or put the emergency off them. Or
that so was now, such a headache. It really is the Heath Shaw rule again. That's the just for late outs, the rolling lockout.
The Heath Shaw rule. The last AFL issue to look at, or AFL change, is decreased rotations, Mark. So this is the first year the cap will really be felt. It's dropping down to what's the exact amount, Mark?
80, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was 120 last year, but that wasn't really felt. So do you think that'll have much impact in terms of picking players, you know, with greater endurance, or do you see a problem with more resting because games become, you know, more physically demanding? Do you see any sort of ramifications involved with that? I
hope the second part's not true. Probably at this stage, it's difficult for someone like me to predict exactly how it's going to play out. I mean, you sort of think that maybe ruckmen are going to spend less time on the bench, defenders are going to spend less time on the bench. I think what they're really looking for as an AFL system is that you have more kick to a contest situations. So just as a footy observer, I hope that happens.
I guess that one's a little bit harder to pick, like you said, especially from where we're sitting. Even the coaches probably don't have a concrete answer for that. So we'll kind of have to see how the season pans out. But, I mean, we'll certainly be looking for trends along that line and hopefully get some sort of Supercoach edge by being able to pick pick some sort of trend, hopefully, as the season unfolds.
Yeah, and I guess that talking about it, that side is you might end up with the rookies being the ones more likely to be having bench time. So although they're not going to be sub, they might not be spending full games on the ground.
So, you know, that's more of the theoretical abstract stuff that we've talked about now. Yeah, we're going to move into some more concrete player talk now. So we thought for the rest of the show, what we'll do is look at the, you know, top averaging players in each position. We like to look at, you know, we can pick six defenders. So let's look at the top six and that are available to us this year and look at what the ceiling or the basement is at for the top six. And we'll look at the top scoring players like Heath Shaw, 112, you know, beats the next highest defender by an average of 9. Is he worth shelling out for? And then we'll also look at a lock each from both of us, which we did last year, which I think went pretty well. One from each position from both of us, and also talk about a few of the big DPP changes, like Jimmy Bartel in the back line. Going deep on Cats players again, Mark.
Yeah, I'm just so concerned that you're going to convince me to pick him. He's in my team at the moment, but yeah. He's getting pretty old, isn't he?
He is.
But all those, right. Yeah, all right.
We'll start off
We're not going to get to probably all of that, and people should be aware that this is a bit of an evolving conversation over the preseason, that we'll get a bit of a better feel for what we think the top six in each position can score and who they might be over the course of the next few weeks.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mark. We don't want to go into anything too concrete so that this show remains relevant or somewhat relevant for the entirety of the preseason, and so that listeners that latch on a little bit later can listen from preseason at 1-2. I think we're going to be doing about 7 or 8 this preseason and have some sort of continuity and remain relevant. So we'll start off with the top averaging players. Mark, I want to start off in the back line with the most obvious question. Heath Shaw, like I just said, 112.64. The next best is Boyd at 103.94. And he, of course, is a new addition to the back line this year.
Yeah.
Jaron McVeigh, 100.55, is the third highest. He, of course, also is a new addition to the back line this year, although we have had him in the past, I think a couple of years ago. He's back available in the back line. And then, you know, the next player, Alex Rantz, is actually the only player other than Shaw in that 1-4 that was available to us in the back line last year at 97. So Heath Shaw, by far and away, is the highest averaging defender. That makes him also the most expensive player. So where do you sit on him? I remember he was a lock, or, you know, he was talked about heaps last season. He worked out very well.
Yeah, he did. He very much worked out very well last year.
Played all 22 games, which we've not seen him do before. Where do you sit on him this season?
The general consensus in the past has been never pay top dollar for Heath Shaw because he's very patchy with his form. One thing we saw last year is there was a lot less defensive taggers in the game, which meant that Heath Shaw was able to, he didn't really have those down games where he's just completely tagged out of a game. If we see that continue again this year, then that bodes very, very well for Heath Shaw. I think that he's more mature. There's a new attitude up at the Giants. The Giants are getting better. He's definitely in my first draft. I think that if you have an outlier by 10 points, that's someone you really, really have to strongly consider. That's an extra, I know it's extra money, but it's an extra 200 points a season. So that's a lot. And I think that you have to pick the outlier if you think that they can keep up that form.
I'm going to take a contrary view, I suppose. 22 games, we don't see Heath Shaw normally do that. 112.64, career best average. So for me, those are both warning bells. And you know, Mark, I don't like I don't like picking players at the peak of their power because it means I'm paying career top dollar for them, and unless I'm really absolutely certain about them. And, you know, Heath Shaw had a great year considering, you know, the Giants also did quite well, 10 wins or something like that. So I don't want to go too deep in the back line. I try and find a little bit more value there. And look, I don't see Heath Shaw really improving from 113. You know, I think 110, you'd still be pretty happy paying top dollar for him. And based off that, I think because he can't realistically go too much further up in price, I'm happy to forfeit a few rounds of points on Heath Shaw. And then if he retains this type of scoring, I can just upgrade to him eventually. But I don't think I'll be taking the starting monetary risk on him, or at this point in the season anyway.
Okay. I think that during the season, it's hard to get a lot of money to bring backline players in. Like, I know last year I really struggled to get Luke Hodge in because he was just became so expensive. You want to be saving money on your upgrades in the backline generally and getting the players while they're cheap. So I guess that's just another counterpoint.
Hmm. Matthew Boyd's another one to talk about because he of course, is new to the back line. Like I said, he's the second highest averaging from Sierra. Of course, age is a big factor with Boyd. He has been a little bit on a downhill. How do you feel about him, and can he keep this up? He only played 18 games, which is something to consider as well.
I think that's something very, very strongly to consider. I think he absolutely has the potential to average 105 again, but I would be very surprised if he played more than 18 this season. And if he only plays 18, then you definitely shouldn't pick him.
I think I'd echo your sentiments there. And before we move off the back line, I just want to talk about, you know, the top six averaging for the back line. So Bashahuli comes in at 95.64 at sixth. Enright, 95.62 next. And I think if you drop down to 12th, you're only dropping down, let's say, 4 points to Dylan Roberton at 90.60. So do you think that this year, similar to last year, is more of a mid-price game in the back line again?
I guess it depends what your definition of mid-price is, but I think that I would be picking a couple of premiums in the $400,000 to $500,000 bracket. So not necessarily mid-prices, but that bit cheaper. I don't think that the six we have listed there of Shaw, Boyd, McVeigh, Rance, McDonald and Hooley will be the top six at the end of the year. Yeah. So I think there's probably going to be three that are kind of come up that aren't there at the moment.
Yeah. So if you're looking at maybe not mid-price, but a cheap premium that might elevate themselves into the top six, that'd be what you're looking at, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, you've got young players like Laird and Kolodziejczyk that are McMillan even.
McMillan!
Doherty that have had really good seasons last year and have ways to improve. And then you've got other people like Bartel, Birchall, that sort of player that could also average a bit more.
That wraps up part one of the first Supercoach Coach podcast of the 2016 season. We're releasing the next half on Tuesday night, so look out for that. And thanks for listening. Catch you again next week. See ya.